bid, then it is wrong. And so we need to be very careful that all of them are controlled completely by the power of the Holy Ghost. In other words, that He controls our experiences. If we have any natural learning abilities, then He controls all of that. And if we follow traditions and so forth, that He is in that. All right? The theme of Job, main theme, is why do the righteous suffer? If we listen to Job's miserable comforters, you will find out it's because you've done something terrible. But we're not going to listen to his comforters. Other things that are included in this book is how God deals with us personally and how Satan works. All right, Job is perhaps one of the oldest, not only one of the oldest, but perhaps the oldest book of the Bible. I don't know who wrote it, possibly Moses, even as he wrote the book of Genesis and part of Exodus by Revelation. But anyway, it was could be the oldest of the books of the Bible, and it was definitely given before the law because it covers every phase of life and never even mentions the law of Moses. All right, verse 1, we read first of all the God's testimony of this man, and I want you to keep this testimony in mind all the way through the book, because it will come in handy a little bit later on when Job is under fire, as we hear the saying today. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. That man was perfect, upright, one that feared God, reverenced him, and he hated evil. Now this word perfect, it means that he was perfect as to his attitudes of wanting to yield to God. He wanted what the Lord had for him. God read his heart. He wanted to be exactly where and what God wanted him to be. Now, we can possess exactly the same attitude today. This can be our testimony right tonight. Now, it does not mean that we're perfected in all of our attitudes and all of our ways in every part about us. As the Apostle Paul says, not as though I were already perfect, either had already attained, but I follow after. At the same time, Paul had that perfect heart attitude of wanting the fullness that God had for him. And so this is very important for us, to always have such an attitude. Well, Job had that. He was an upright man. He yielded to God, or he feared God. He reverenced God, and he hated evil. All right? And then there were born unto him 7 sons, 3 daughters. His substance also was 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 she-asses, and so on. Now you have heard the expression, being as poor as Job's turkey. Well, that's not altogether true, because Job was anything but a poor man at this time. Now God stripped him down for a time to where the poor man had nothing. But this is really not the end of Job. Find that God did strip him, but we will find Job's blessings a little bit later on. All right. In verse 5, it was so when the days of their feasting were gone about that Job sent and sanctified them, that is, his sons and daughters and so forth. He rose up early in the morning, offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, it may be, my sons have sinned, cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually. And so notice that he was raising his family to be righteous, and he was raising them on the basis of offerings, of figuratively on the basis of Calvary. He did not trust their works any more than he trusted his own, and so he was raising them according to the offerings of the Lord. Now this, of course, was had to be by revelation, because Job lived before that there were any books of the Bible written. All right. Verse 6, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. Now, Satan, of course, is a fallen angel. I believe that word son should be translated angels. And so we find here that Satan was an angel, the most beautiful of them, as a matter of fact. But he has fallen, and the Lord wanted to know of Satan, where did you come from? And he answered the Lord, says, going to and fro in the earth and walking up and down in it. The Lord said, have you considered my servant Job? Now, God knows what Satan has set out to do, and of course that is actually to thwart all of the purposes of God. Now, this is Satan's ministry, really, that he has taken upon himself. And this is what I was saying a little while ago, that if Satan can defeat the Jews, he can defeat God. Because, you see, the promises of God are tied up in the Jews. The promises of God to the natural seed of Abraham, which is the Jews, they were given unto Abraham. So God has to take care of that Jewish nation. He has to. If Satan ever wins over the Jews, then he wins over God. And this is so very important for us to realize. Well, anyway, Satan is always trying to thwart the purposes and promises of God. And so he just tells God what he's doing. Verse 8, the Lord said to Satan, have you considered Job? There is none like him in the earth. And notice again, a perfect, upright man, one that fears God and hates evil. Job answered the Lord, you can just almost hear it. Well, does Job fear God for nothing? Well, no wonder he serves you. Look what you do for him. Have you not made a hedge about him and his house, about all he had on the other side? You bless the work of his hands, and his substance increased in the land. Put forth your hand and touch all he has, and he'll curse you to your face. You take down that hedge, and you'll find out that Job's just like anyone else. All right? The first thing we learn then about Satan is that he can only go as far as God will allow him to go. So we find here, notice verse 11, put forth, or verse 12, the Lord said to Satan, all that he has is in your power, only upon himself put not forth your hand. Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. So he can only go as far as God will allow him to go. Now this is something that we can take comfort in. That is that God will never allow Satan to tempt us or to pressure us any more than we are able to stand. He has control over the devil regardless of how powerful Satan may be. All right. So first of all, in verse 15, the Sabaeans came and took away the all of his oxen and his asses. Verse 16, while he was yet speaking, another man came and said, fire of God has fallen from heaven and has burned up the sheep and the servants. Verse 17, while this man was speaking, another man came and said, the Chaldeans made out three bands, fell on the camels. They carried them away and slain the servants. Verse 18, while he was yet speaking, another came and said, your sons and daughters were eating and drinking in their eldest brother's house, and there came a great wind from the wilderness, and it fell on the young men, and they're dead. Well, here in just a very few minutes, Job learns of everything that he had, and all of it is gone. His attitude, verse 20, he arose, he rent his mantle, shaved his head, fell down upon the ground, and worshipped. Said, naked came I out of my mother's womb, naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, the Lord is taken away, blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. Now, this is, as we find here, and as Jesus said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. Well, notice what Job spoke, you see, and this is the type of character he was, this is the type of attitude that he possessed at this particular time. This would be wonderful attitudes to have if that was all that a man had. Because it's not easy to stand up and to rejoice in the Lord when everything is gone, and most especially when loved ones have been taken away. But this man, he fell down on the ground and he worshipped the Lord as a result of that. So you see, he was no small man spiritually, as we would say today. He was very much mature, and yet in all this, Job was not absolutely perfect. If he had been, he wouldn't have been here. But God had something else to do in his life, and so it is with us, that he continues to work in our lives, even though that we do have a wonderful testimony now. And we will notice more of that as we go on. All right? Notice also that he manifests himself as being the overcomer who exalts the name of God in every circumstance. This was not just a few choice words that Job had learned somewhere, but this was out of his heart and out of the overcomer heart. In verse 1, again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan was there too. And the Lord wanted to know, where have you been? Verse 3, the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? There is none like him in the earth, a perfect, upright man, one that fears God, hates evil. And so God has not changed his opinion of Job at all. He still thinks that he is tops, we might say. And still he holds fast to his integrity. Although you moved me against him to destroy him, notice, without cause. And so keep in mind through this book that even though Job is accused of doing something horrible, yet God says that he moved against him without cause. Now we will find the reason that he allowed this is to perfect something in Job and to show Job some things that Job didn't already know. But it is not because Job had done something wrong. And so in our own lives, whenever we are in trial and affliction, it is not necessarily because we have committed some terrible wrong. It is just that God wants to develop something in our character. He wants to develop something in our attitudes. He wants us to show something unto us concerning himself. Well, Satan says, all right, you lay your hand on his flesh in verse 5, put forth your hand and touch his bone and flesh, he'll curse you to your face. Again, the Lord said to Satan, behold, he is in thine hand, but save his life. He said, Job, you can't have his life. Again, Satan can only go so far as God will allow him to go. All right, so he went forth, remember, and he smote Job with boils from the sole of his foot under his crown. Now, I'd always thought of these boils just as being something distasteful and kind of a nuisance. But if you ever had a boil, I had a couple a few years ago, them things hurt. And so Job was actually in a time of misery, and I only had two of them, and yet this poor man had them from the top of his head to the sole of his feet, covered all over with them, so his body had to be really racked with pain. And so it was more than just a matter of being a nuisance to him. Well, verse 9, Job lost something else. His wife said to him, do you still retain your integrity? Curse God and die. And so now when his wife does not stay with him any longer, she is not one with him. Now whether she left him or not, I can't say that. But she is not one in spirit with him. And you find in our trials today, it makes suffering and trials so much easier to bear if you have someone who is of the same spirit with you. It is worse to suffer alone than any other way. If you have people who sympathize with you, it is much easier to take your suffering. But you see, Job was put out by himself here, and even his wife did not stand with him. Well, in verse 10, he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women speaks. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God? Shall we not receive evil? And this doesn't mean something evil or wicked or sinful. It simply means something that bad or unwanted by Job. In all this, did not Job sin with his lips? And so he did not go against God and accuse God and blame God for what happened unto him. And this is very important for us, is that we do not get to such a point that we blame God for what happens unto us. This is a very dangerous place to get to, that we would ever blame him for anything that would happen to us. And again, I say that this must be the attitude of an overcomer. It must be worked in us. Because how easy it would have been for David to blame God when God took away his son. How easy it would have been for Job to blame God for the things that happened to him here. And so it's very important for us that we do not blame God. There's a difference in taking things from the hand of God and blaming God. Now, Job took this from the hand of the Lord, but he did not blame God as though he were very unfair with him. All right. In verse 11, when Job's three friends, and you'll want to probably put a great big question mark, with friends like he had, who needs enemies? Anyway, when they heard of all this evil that was come upon him, they came everyone from his own place, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. They had made an appointment together to come to mourn with him and to comfort him. Well, Job could do without their comfort, as we will find. And verse 13, they sat down with him on the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and none spoke a word unto him. They saw that his grief was very great. Well, here you find the religiousness or the religious zeal that people have. And so they just sat down here and they didn't say a word. Well, in chapter 3, we find right at the outset that Job is possessed of two natures, just like we are. And so chapter 3 is the voice of the flesh. Well, you will find that the voice of the flesh comes forward in trial when he doesn't come forward any other time. But nevertheless, he must come out and, of course, be judged. Verse 1, after this opened Job his mouth, he cursed his day, and he said, "Let the day perish wherein I was born, the night in which it was said there is a man-child conceived. Let that day be darkness. Let not God regard it from above. Neither let the light shine on it. Let darkness and shadow of death stain it. Let a cloud dwell upon it. Let the blackness of the day terrify it." Verse 11, "Why died I not from the womb? Why did not I give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? Why did the knees prevent me, or the breath that I should suck? For now would I have lain still and been quiet. I should have slept when I had been at rest." Verse 25, "The thing which I greatly feared is come upon me, and that which I was afraid of is coming to me. I was not in safety, neither had I rest, neither was I quiet, yet trouble came." So you see the mournful cry that goes up from Job at this particular point. Now, we do not read the words of victory that we have previously, but neither can we pounce right on Job and begin to cast him down and to cut him down, because it is simply a time that is learned by experience, the weakness of the flesh, and giving in unto the flesh, even as Job found out here. And in verse 25, he said, "The thing I greatly feared has come upon me." Well, fear hath torment. And, of course, only love can displace it. Well, that simply means that we can have such a great love for God that he will actually dispel our fears and so on. In chapter 4, find that Eliphaz answered and said, "If we say to commune with you, will you not be grieved? But who can withhold himself from speaking?" And we just can't contain ourselves any longer. "And behold, you have instructed me, and you have strengthened the weak hands." Now I want you to notice the way that Eliphaz comes on here. And first of all, he comes on strong with flattery. And so mark it well when people go to flattering you, because a lot of times they have something else up their sleeve. He says that you've instructed many, you've strengthened the weak hands, your words have upheld him that was falling, and you have strengthened the feeble knees, but now it has come upon you and you faint. It touches you and you're troubled. Well, he flatters him on the one hand, but then he comes right back on the other and says, "Well, see there, you get a little test and you just fall right on the weight of it." Well, this reminds us of some very religious people today that would be so ready and willing to cast down others. Well, I tell you, it is dangerous to be so quick to condemn people and to judge their lives, because we have not experienced and may not be going through what they are going through. Now, when the truth finally comes out, you find some people here judging a man who was far more spiritual than they ever dared to be. So in our own case, that when we become critical and begin to judge other people, well, mark it well, they may be a little bit more spiritual even than what we are. Verse 6, "Is not this thy fear, your confidence, your hope, the uprightness of your ways?" And then he gets down to the real heart, the real meat of the matter, and he says, "All right, Job, remember, I pray you, whoever perished being innocent, or were the righteous ever cut off? Even if I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same. By the blast of God they perish, by the breath of his nostrils are they consumed." And so, in essence, this is the essence of his whole discourse. He has a lot of words to say that we will notice, but the essence of it all is, Job, you must be guilty of something, and the Lord is punishing you. Now, this is what every one of them all of their multitude of words could be summed up in these few words, that God was surely punishing Job for something that he had done. Well, now, this is actually the way of legality. That is, that people do not see the fact that God is working in our lives. They do not see the work of grace, that God is doing something in us. Now, you can compare this with James 1, verses 1 to 5, also Romans 5, verses 1 to 5. And there you will find, let patience have her perfect work. And then you find over in the book of Romans how he says that tribulation worketh patience, and so forth. And then because of the love of God is shed abroad.